You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention please. Now batting for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, FanRag Fantasy Baseball, the host, Al Melchior, FanRag Fantasy Baseball.
Welcome everybody to FanRag Fantasy Baseball. I am your host, I'm Al Melchior. And with me today is a friend of mine, former colleague. You know him from CBSSports.com and from the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Of course, I'm talking about Heath Cummings. Heath, first time on the show. Welcome.
First time talking to you in far too long. How are you doing, buddy?
Good. It has been a long time. So good to hear you.
We got a lot going
on here today, but you know, of course, we're going to talk about the Royals, and the way I tried to entice you to come on the show is I said, well, it's scheduled for the day after a Jason Vargas start. I figured that would, you know, that would seal the deal. And
he is so perplexing right now. Like there's no chance at all I want to buy into Jason Vargas, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more later in the show. But you don't have much choice at this point. Like, you're not just going to leave him on the waiver wire with a 0.4 ERA.
In fact, I'm amazed he's in as many leagues as he's in, and it's not a lot. I mean, across CBS, ESPN, Yahoo, his ownership rate's in the neighborhood of 70%. So he's gone in a lot of leagues. But yeah, he's there in the standard and shallower leagues, or at least he is potentially. And I don't think you can leave him out there. So I imagine probably in the next 24 hours or so, that'll climb up, and he's got two starts next week. So there's really no reason.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two starts against the White Sox and Twins.
Yeah. Those are pretty fair matchups, I'd say. We will definitely be talking about Jason Vargas a lot more later on, but we do have a lot of news to get to, Heath. And just within the last couple of hours, a report that David Price, his rehab process has slowed down due to some elbow soreness, which is not something you want to hear, and it's not necessarily anything we need to be alarmed about. But I think probably now more realistically, we're looking at maybe an early June return as opposed to mid-May. And, you know, if you're stashing Price, I mean, I think he's still need to do that. But Heath, what do you think about this latest news on David Price?
Well, I hate it because I thought I was being really cute drafting David Price in the 10th or 11th round, and everybody else was overreacting. And now it doesn't look like so much. But this is one of those pieces of news. It's not actionable. There's nothing you can do but pout about it if you own him, because you're not dropping David Price. You just hold on to him and hope that he can get back on track.
Yeah. I mean, pouting is an action of sorts. It's not really going to change your roster much, but it is pretty much the only thing I think you can reasonably do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an action for some more than others.
Well, of course, we've got Starling Marte news, which is not really news anymore. But since we were last on Monday, I think that we'd be remiss not to talk about that a little bit. 80-game suspension for Nandrolone, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. So Marte, too. I mean, I think you have to stash him. I have had one or two people ask me on Twitter if he should be dropped, and I think absolutely not. But I think the bigger question, of course, two questions really, and one is who are some of the better replacements, and what is Adam Frazier's value now since he's the apparent short-term replacement on the Pirates for Marte? So are there any particular outfielders? Have you had to target anybody? Are you a Marte owner?
I have Marte in three different leagues, all head-to-head leagues, which makes it even better because you get to go a whole week without a third outfielder. I'm not so sure in a 12-team league that I will end up holding Marte for the entire time. Right now, I mean, I went and took a look, and there weren't really options on the waiver wire that enticed me. And this early in the year, I think you've probably got somebody else you can drop. I'm hoping that I can hold on to him, but specifically in a head-to-head points league, which isn't his best format, you could get into a situation where you're 1-3 or 2-4, 2-5 later in the year, and you get to worry about making the playoffs before you worry about what Marte is going to do for you when he comes back. I wrote about Frazier the day after, and then, of course, he's not in the lineup the very next day. I think he probably gets sold a little bit short as a decent source of batting average, and if he's hitting at the top of the lineup as he has been, maybe runs, and he's stolen bases, not very efficiently, but he likes to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so all that is true,
Yeah, there's just no pop there at all. I guess the guy that's sub 60% owned that you really have to consider is Avisail Garcia. Like, I don't really want to buy into him, but he is out there. And Steven Souza, a couple more extra base hits today. If he's available in your league, I'd love to go get him.
Yeah, those would be great options. I think if you're looking to replace that power-speed combination, and granted, Marte did hit just 9 home runs last year, but Carlos Gomez is out there, even in CBS leagues, which tend to be the deeper ones. His ownership rate last I looked at, I think, was right around 65%. So I think Gogo's a potential option as well.
Absolutely.
Another set of players that I think are probably seeing a lot of action on waivers, Kota Glover and Sean Kelly. But the bad news, I think it's bad news, is that they'll be splitting the save opportunities in Washington. Do you see anyone, either one of the two, emerging, you know, after a week or two in this situation?
Well, you know how I like to frustrate Adam on the podcast, and I frustrated him this morning by saying the only thing I really feel confident in is one of these guys is going to be significantly better than the other, and it won't be a split for long. We don't generally see, especially with good teams, splits last all that long. When everything's going right for Sean Kelly, I think he's the better pitcher.
I don't actually think there's much doubt about that. If there's doubt, it's only because we haven't seen a lot of Glover. But
right.
Kelly is, I think I made the statement. Now, it wasn't, I don't think it was on the show, but in some forum that I think Kelly, if he were a closer, I mean, he'd be, I think, easily top 15, maybe even top 10. But there's
that is all the closers that we thought that had potential have been. Yeah, it's getting easier to climb those ranks.
Yeah, but this is a weird situation, and we've talked about it on the show a few times where there were people in the coaching staff who really preferred Glover, wanted him to be the closer right from the get-go, and there's concerns about Kelly's durability. So even though I completely agree with you, Heath, that Kelly is the superior reliever, I actually, if I had to speculate on one, it would be Glover because of the organizational politics. I just think he's good.
What I don't understand, and I've heard the durability thing with Kelly before, and I'm not doubting the fact that he had durability concerns, but it's not like eighth inning guys throw less innings than closers. So I don't know why you think you're going to have, it's not more stressful to his arm to pitch in the ninth inning. He's not going to pitch more innings because he's a closer. I don't know why you'd be protecting his health by pitching him as a setup man.
I mean, that's a good point, and I would have to assume if the Nationals organization is legitimately concerned, and I have to think that they are, about Kelly's durability, that they would manage it from the eighth inning. And so you'd see a mix of people there, but I think in terms of closing out the games, if they were going to go one way, if they were going to go to somebody 2-3 nights in a row, 3 out of 4, Glover would be the guy, not Kelly. But this is all speculation, of course. Just as we could speculate on the Mets closer situation, Jerry's Familia is back today from his suspension. And there have been reports that he will not just go immediately into being the full-time closer. How do you see this one playing out? Do you think, because Reed's been pretty good, do you think that he maybe can fend Familia off, or that Familia does get the job full-time at some point in the future?
I don't think there's anything Reed can do to quote-unquote fend Familia off. He's got to hope that Familia comes back and it's just not good at the very, very beginning. And I personally feel like Familia comes back, maybe they pitch him in the seventh inning one game, they pitch him in the eighth inning one game, and as long as he looks like the Jerry's Familia of old, he'll be eased back in, but a month from now, there's going to be no question who the closer is in New York.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And, of course, if you're an Aston Reed owner, you've enjoyed the ride so far, so it's kind of a bummer for folks who own Reed, but I think that's the way it goes. And in Baltimore, Zach Britton is scheduled to have an MRI, although Buck Showalter is saying that's a precautionary MRI on Friday. Britton on the DL with the forearm injury. Brad Brock looked really good in his first chance at a save last night. We don't know how long Britton's going to be out. The Orioles are kind of soft-pedaling the situation there, but do you think it's worth getting Brock on the chance that he's in there for a few weeks?
Yeah, in a league where I could, like a points league where I can only start two closers, I'm probably not messing with it. But any type of a lot of my rotisserie leagues or head to head categories leagues, I really went pretty reliever heavy. And in that type of scenario, I'd like to have Brock, whether it's for a week or two. And if once Britton's back, I'll just drop him and go get somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Brock's pretty available. And I think he's worth it for however long he's in there. And let me just breeze through a few injury notes here as we head into break within a couple of minutes. Logan Forsythe went on the disabled list with a fractured right big toe, or as Jerry Seinfeld said, the captain of the toes. Carlos Gonzalez was hit by a pitch on his right hand. He just has a bruise. The x-rays came up negative. So that's some relatively good news for Carlos Gonzalez. And also somebody in sort of the same boat, Carlos Correa. He's back today after being out since last Saturday with a contusion on his hand from a hit by pitch. Jason Worth is day-to-day with a groin spasm. Lucas Duda left. I'm sorry?
Those are never good.
No, I have to agree with that. I thought there was a reason why I kind of flew right past that. I really didn't want to ponder that too much. Lucas Duda left last night's game against the Phillies early with a hyperextended left elbow, and Travis d'Arnaud also left early with a right wrist contusion. Jose Iglesias was involved in a very sort of bizarre play at the end of the game last night against the Rays, where Francisco Rodriguez blew his second save, but he loaded up the bases, but Iglesias was in some ways largely responsible because he tripped on the bag as he was about to make the throw, threw the ball away, and then in falling down took a knee to the head. So he was checked for a concussion. I have not seen any follow-up there on Jose Iglesias, but that was a pretty nasty play for him. So we hope Iglesias is all right. In better news, Gene Segura is he won't be back this week as initially expected, but he is expected back next Tuesday coming off the DL with his hamstring injury. So, Heath, we got a lot more. We got some Jason Vargas talk and some other great pitching performances from last night, or maybe even from the day yesterday. We'll check in on some scores, lineups, weather report, all that right when we come back. So stick around. Welcome back, everyone, to FanRag Fantasy Baseball. I'm Al Melvier, and I'm your host for the hour. And my guest for the hour is Heath Cummings from CBSSports.com. And we got a lot of action going on right now. We got lineups coming in. We got games going on. There's weather out there. We'll talk about all of that. But first, let's talk a little bit about RotoExperts.com. The RotoExperts.com exclusive edge in-season fantasy baseball package is your ultimate bench coach for 2017. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. They'll help you set the ideal lineups every week. And this season, you'll get a built-in fantasy training staff with their new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So go get the RotoExperts.com exclusive edge in-season fantasy baseball package right now and watch your team soar to the top of the standings. Enter the promo code FREERADIO at the checkout for a special discount. Now, Heath, if you remember before the break, we had talked about Lucas Duda. He left the game early last night with a hyperextended left elbow. And you may also remember back in spring training, Jay Bruce took some ground balls at first base.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Jay Bruce starting at first base for the Mets tonight against the Phillies, and that makes room for Michael Conforto to play center field with Granderson in right and Cespedes in left. So
I think that's the big news, is making room for Michael Conforto to play. I don't know if you're the Mets why you don't do that on a more consistent basis, because you've got to find out what this guy is. In a way, like Lucas Duda was off to a good start, but in a way, this could be a good thing for the Mets.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want bad things for Lucas Duda, but, I think a lot of us were frustrated about Michael Conforto not getting enough playing time. So this may work that situation right out for him. So that's good. Looking at the weather for the rest of the games on the slate, not a whole lot of games tonight, but one that you should probably keep an eye on if you're in a daily lineup league or playing DFS. The Orioles at the Reds, there's a 45% chance of precipitation in Cincinnati, so that one could be delayed, possibly canceled, because the chance of precipitation only increases as the night goes on. So make sure you check in on that. Yeah.
And thankfully for DFS purposes, it's Wade Miley against Scott Feldman, so you don't have to worry about whether you're going to play the pitchers or not.
Right.
But there might be a lot of hitters you want to get in your lineup.
May need to rethink your stack on that one.
Yes.
And also just looking at the games right now, we got a extra innings affair in Toronto. Nice pitcher's duel between Chris Sale and Marco Estrada, but they're both out of the game now. Kimbrel came in the ninth, but Sale pitched 8 scoreless, and Estrada pitched 6 scoreless. So if you started them this week or today, that's nice news for you. And I thought that the ride was going to be over for Irvin Santana this week. I really did. I thought that the nice start for him was totally matchup driven. And I know one of those was against the Royals, so I know I'm, you know, kind of talking trash by saying that to you, but Irvin, Big Irv, nice game against the Indians, six innings rather, just 1 run allowed with 5 strikeouts. So some good pitching performances already today, but let's be backward looking. What's that?
Some really bad news. I was talking up Steven Souza, and he just struck out against what I'm pretty sure is an imaginary baseball player.
Oh.
Yes, Warwick Southold.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize he was up.
Yeah. He just just struck out Steven Souza, so I think he's made up. They have a picture up, but it could be anybody. It looks very generic.
Well, Warwick Southold definitely having a nicer game than Daniel Norris did, unfortunately. I thought this would be a great matchup for Norris, and he did get 4 strikeouts, but 5 runs, 4 earned, and 4 2/3. So not a good day for Daniel Norris. But let's take a look backwards here. Jason Vargas, we've already talked about him. Just an incredible season so far. He had 7 shutout innings last night and 9 strikeouts, no walks. Though no walks, you know, not a total shock because Vargas has always had pretty good control. But the 9 strikeouts and the changeup's been the big story. 10 swings and misses just on the changeup. So that pitch continues to be a dazzler. I know before you said you can't really afford to leave Vargas out there, but to me that was almost like begrudging. Like, you know, well, he's hot now and he's got 2 starts with great matchups next week. But I, you know, if Vargas had a 1 start week ahead, I would be trying to pick him up because he's been so good and that changeup has just been such a game changer for him that maybe there really is something to this.
I think part of the problem is we have so much information now with velocity and pitch movement, we feel like we should be able to explain it every time something like this happens. There's no explanation. He's got an 81 mile an hour changeup that he's throwing off of an 87 mile an hour fastball. I don't know how that changeup is fooling anybody. He's always been a fly ball pitcher and he's got a 53% ground ball rate. It's perplexing to me, but yes, must start next week. And if he's good, like, I don't think he's going to be great this year, but because he already has these 3 starts under his belt, the odds are pretty decent that this is his career year.
Yeah. I mean, he'd have to really kind of follow up at this point. I think even though it's only been 3 starts, you know, he's got such momentum at this point and padded the front end of his game log this year. So I'm intrigued, you know, and it's like a lot of lesser pitchers who we, you know, pitch and ditch in the hopes that there's something more than that. So, you know, like I said, Irvin Santana, I wasn't buying into that at all. Maybe after the start, I need to take another look at Irvin Santana. But Vargas, I think there's possibly something there. Amir Garrett's another one that I've been very skeptical of because he's just really performing above and beyond the level that we saw from him in the minor leagues, particularly at AAA where he sort of stumbled. 7 innings for Garrett against the Orioles yesterday, 7 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts for Garrett. He is just getting a ton of swings against batters, which, again, was not something he was doing to this degree in the minor league. So what gives here with Garrett?
Yeah, this is totally – it's not as shocking as Jason Vargas, but that's partially just because I'm an ageist and Garrett's under 25 years old. So yeah, it makes sense that he's having a breakout. Again, when you're striking out batters at a higher rate than you ever have in the minor leagues at any level, including high A just 2 years ago, and you always had control issues, or at least kind of minor control issues in the minors, and now you're not walking anybody, it's a big shock. But I would be more likely to buy into Garrett than I would Vargas, I think.
Vargas has been around a lot longer, but this version of Vargas has been around probably about as long as this version of Garrett's been around. So there's something to that. And if you're going to project more upside for the younger guy, there's a certain logic to that argument. And Joe Ross, I was kind of excited to see his season debut because he was one of the many pitchers in the offseason in the spring who had been either tinkering with the pitch or using a new pitch. And so the reports were he was working on his changeup, and they threw it just three times against the Braves. So that wasn't the story, but he didn't really need the changeup. He had a great out against the Braves, 7 strikeouts in 7 innings, 3 runs allowed, just 1 walk. But this is the stat that I just love from this game. Ross got 25 called strikes, which is a huge number for any start. The Braves are 4th in the major leagues in swing rate. So go figure that one out.
No, that doesn't make any sense at all. And Ross is somebody I wrote about yesterday, the day before the start, because he was, I think, 72% owned at CBS. And I kind of trolled Stroman owners a little bit by showing that over their careers, Ross has been a slightly better pitcher, and Stroman's always near 100% owned. And I think Ross should be near 100% owned. He's got good potential. He's still really young. And the short period of time that he's been in the majors, he's basically been a number 3, maybe number 4 fantasy starter. So if he's on the waiver wire in your league, you should go get him, no matter the size of your league.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And, the one clue that we sort of get from the PitchFX data with Ross is that he was throwing the slider a little harder than he has in the past and not getting as many swings on that. So maybe he really was fooling the Braves with the slider. But it's one start. We'll see how this all develops for Joe Ross. Dallas Keuchel, I don't think there's a whole lot to say here, but just another great start for him. 7 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 Ks. Against the Angels, I guess if there is a thing I would say about it, it's that I'm always encouraged when a pitcher gets strikeouts against the Angels, and Keuchel managed to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, that I've always kind of been a Dallas Keuchel doubter, and I would certainly be looking to see if somebody is buying into the fact that he's going to match his Cy Young season. If I could sell high to that degree, I would absolutely be doing it, but he's for me, a borderline top 20 starting pitcher, so I wouldn't just give him away.
Well, he's firmly in my top 20, so I'm just because you're the doubter, so we're playing our respective roles here.
It's just too bad that I don't own him in any leagues that we're in together. You probably had him.
I do. I know I've got him in Tout Wars. I'm not entirely sure I do have him in other leagues, but I know I've got him in Tout Wars, and happy about that. He and Max Scherzer are my aces, so makes me feel better about paying $11 for David Price. I'll put it that way.
And then
taking the mound for the Angels in that game against the Astros, J.C. Ramirez, a recent addition to the Angels rotation when Garrett Richards went down. And I'll admit, I was completely dismissing him. This is a journeyman reliever who really did not have standout stats as a reliever. 5 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, but 9 strikeouts at the Astros. And remember, the Astros are not the strikeout machines that they were a year or two ago. So that's pretty impressive. And Ramirez is not the pitcher he was a year or two ago because he's now throwing a curve, and he got 10 swings and misses with that curve against the Astros. And he's a 2-star pitcher next week at home versus the struggling Blue Jays, and then on the road at the Rangers. So how are you liking them apples?
I am not liking them apples at all. You can have all of the J.C. Ramirez apples. I'm not buying into this one start. He would need 3 or 4 starts for me to use him next week.
All right. Well, that's probably not going to happen and probably not advisable. So, Zach Greinke, a good start. Second good one in a row. 8 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, a walk, 6 strikeouts at the Padres. So, and you've been a Greinke doubter, as have I. But is Zach back?
Yeah, and I was going into last year just because I think, as a rule, people generally overreact to the year before, especially when we have a long track record with a player. And heading into 2016, I thought everybody was acting like he was too close to the pitcher he was in 2015, and then they did the same thing again this year. So I actually own a little bit of Greinke this year because of how cheap he was. It's the Padres, so I don't know how much you can really make out of it, but he's off to a pretty encouraging start.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd definitely say so. All right, well, we got to go to break again, Heath. We got a couple of pitchers who've been struggling a bit that I want to talk about after the break, but we've got lots of hitters. Haven't even talked about them or the closers. Lots to deal with when we come back, so stay with us. Welcome back, everyone, to FanRag Fantasy Baseball. I'm your host, Al Melchior, and with me today, Heath Cummings from CBSSports.com. And if you've been listening to Heath over the last couple of years over at on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, CBS, you probably know that he's a little bit of a Royals fan. I was going to say homer, but that's probably not fair. But
it's probably fair.
All right. Well, we've already talked extensively about Jason Vargas, as we should. But a little later on, we'll talk about some of the other performances in the early going here for the Royals. Pretty interesting team so far. Slow start, but better of late. But before we do that, we got more pitchers, more hitters, more closers to talk about. Gerrit Cole and Kyle Hendricks, you wouldn't necessarily lump them together. I mean, Cole's been okay overall. Kyle Hendricks has really, really struggled. I think they've probably gone in similar places in a lot of drafts. But, you know, I would put Cole a little bit in the struggling category, too. He had a pretty good start against the Cardinals, 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, only 2 runs allowed. But the 2 runs were 2 solo home runs by Dexter Fowler. And Cole's been giving up a lot of extra base hits. Right now, opponents are putting together an isolated power of 240 against Gerrit Cole. So do you have any concerns about Cole, or is this just, you know, small sample stuff?
I mean, I have a little bit of a concern just because it's now been more than a year since we've really seen really good Gerrit Cole, but I still believe in his upside, even more so than I do in Hendricks, really. And I don't know how much you can hold Kyle Hendricks' start yesterday against him. He's going up against Eric Thames and Travis Shaw.
That's absolutely true. But his velocity is way, way down. So
Yes, for sure. It's concerning.
It could be, sometimes you fail against the omnipotent, but sometimes you fail just because there's something just not quite right. And I think with Hendricks, that's the case here. And I don't think I got Hendricks in a single league this year, and I was very disappointed, but now I'm kind of feeling like maybe I dodged a bullet with Hendricks.
Yeah, I had Hendricks on my bust list, not because I was concerned about his velocity, but just because I thought, much like Rick Porcello, he probably just had his career year. And some of the ways that he produced were not necessarily sustainable. So I expected Hendricks to be a good pitcher, just nowhere close to the pitcher he was in 2016.
Well, he certainly is not doing that. And like you said, you know, in ways that we couldn't, I think, have foreseen, even if we were just looking at kind of a garden variety regression for Hendricks. Some good pitting performances. Probably the most notable was Bryce Harper. Most notable among many good hitting performances, a lot of home runs. Harper 4-for-4 with a walk, so he reached all 5 times and 2 home runs, a grand slam, and a home run, both off of Julio Teheran, who did not have a good outing. And Heath, I wish I had shared this with you before. I just kind of slipped my mind, fell through the cracks, but I saw a tweet that I think was from Mike Petrello of MLB.com yesterday. It's something to the effect of Harper not only hitting really well, but also throwing really well. And so if you kind of wanted some extra reassurance that his shoulder's healthy, that might be an even better indicator than what he's doing at the plate. So how encouraged are you? I mean, there's nobody, you know, I think even the most pessimistic would say Harper was, you know, maybe at worst a early second rounder. But are you encouraged enough to think that he's, you know, one of the two or three most valuable players in fantasy?
I'm just discouraged because we were all a year early last year at CBS when we put Bryce Harper ahead of Mike Trout. Now, I'm encouraged. The shoulder from last year gets a lot of play, and I think rightly so. That was part of the problem with his performance. But there was also a point about a month into the season where pitchers just decided for a while they were not going to throw Harper strikes. Because he got off to a pretty decent start last year.
Yeah.
And I would expect, if he keeps this up, that's going to happen again. And my bigger question will be, did he learn anything from that, and does he respond better to it than he did last year?
Now, I guess that's just something that we'll only be able to see with time, you know? So there's a little bit of uncertainty there still with Harper. Well, teammate Ryan Zimmerman, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I still think, like, we had him as a borderline first-round pick. And
right.
So the number two or three overall hitter is well within the range of possibilities.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so, based on what he did 2 years ago. You know, that upside did not just vanish. So as I start saying, Ryan Zimmerman off to a fantastic start. And he's been getting a lot of attention, not only just because of the results, but because during spring training, there were some pieces out there. I know there was one in particular in the Washington Post, talked about the work that Zimmerman did with Daniel Murphy on working on taking more of an uppercut swing. And apparently that didn't stick. So that'd be a really easy narrative to say, well, Zimmerman changed his swing plane and all is good and happy. But it's actually more kind of his posture at the plate is the thing that stuck with him, where he was reading a recent report about how he's more what they call stacked up, kind of aligned vertically at the plate, and that's allowing him to hit with more authority. Whatever's working, it's been great so far. Do you think that Zimmerman's back to being relevant in a 12-team mixed?
I've struggled with this because there's just so many corner infield options. I have a hard time getting him into my top 30. If you're counting first and third baseman, you're not going to be starting Ryan Zimmerman at first base. So he needs to win at corner infield. And I just don't know that I can buy into the fact that he's going to do that over a full season. I've probably underreacted to Zimmerman's starts more than anything.
Yeah, well, you know, there's two different arguments, at least here, because you can, again, you know, put the nice, neat narrative together and say, well, he's changed his mechanics at the plate and
right.
You see the results. But there was initial narrative that wasn't even really true, you know. So it could just be a small sample thing or, you know, something else entirely. But I'm a little bit intrigued. I could see using Zimmerman in corner infield because, you know, I think first base in particular, third base is deep, but first base is really kind of thinned out. Would you start Zimmerman over Hosmer?
Not yet. I would like it if Daniel Murphy would go talk to Eric Hosmer about hitting the ball in the air once in a while. But, and I'm kind of saying that tongue in cheek because the whole movement of hitting the ball in the air, I'm not sure it's quite as simple as it's been made sound. A lot of times it looks to me like Hosmer is trying to elevate the ball and he's rolling over and hitting 112 mile an hour ground balls to first base. I don't think he's intentionally trying to hit ground balls by any stretch of the imagination. He's just been, he don't have a hot stretch soon enough, and I would expect him to be better than Zimmerman the rest of the way.
All right. Well, let's make a comparison in the outfield, a couple of sluggers. Aaron Judge hit his fifth home run last night. And he's striking out, you know, a good deal, which we would have expected. But the batting average is, you know, is not hurting you. And he's actually got extremely similar numbers to Giancarlo Stanton, who also homered last night against the Mariners, his fourth home run of the year. So as of right now, you know, after 2.5 weeks, you put them side by side. They look similar. Their stats look similar. You put them side by side at the plate. You know, their physiques look similar. Do you think that they're close in value? Or is Stanton going to surge ahead, or is Judge fall off, or both of the above?
I think they may be close in potential value, but because of the limited sample size we have of Aaron Judge, I would say that Stanton is much more likely to come closer to his potential. I guess the one advantage Judge may have is if he could actually stay healthy and play 150 games. That's not something Stanton has really done in his career very often.
Nope.
But no, I can't put them in the same conversation yet. Judge could make that happen, though.
Yeah, and it's a much getting in, you know, a couple of weeks. So a lot of crazy things can happen in that small of a sample, but I'm very surprised at how similar they are, and particularly how Judge is really hitting for a decent average so far. Jay Bruce hitting for more than just a decent average. He's batting .309, and he had that two homer game against the Phillies last night, 3-for-5 game. Is this, I mean, we, you know, Keith, you and I have done a lot of podcasts together, and I know I always kind of feel like a broken record, to use a totally outdated reference, when talking about Jay Bruce, because he's very streaky. And when it's going well, you say, well, it's going to end. When it's going bad, you said, well, it's going to go well again, and he's going to hit for power in the end and not give you a very high average. But so far, he looks like a different Jay Bruce. He's much, much more selective, and you're seeing that show up in a really good walk and strikeout rate.
I feel like we said small sample size over and over today, and it obviously is, but if he can be this selective at the plate and just hit good pitches, he's showing that the whole he can only hit at the Great American Ballpark isn't necessarily true. We probably underrate him, and I don't think this is the first time in Jay Bruce's career that happens. He's still just 30 years old.
Yeah, no, I think you know, we can, you know, sometimes see this. I mean, we typically, and you being an ageist, Heath, you know that we're more likely to buy into this kind of big change, big shift from a younger player. But we see it happen with players in their peak. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, Curtis Granderson 2 years ago had kind of a similar April and then kind of went back to being the usual Curtis Granderson the rest of the year. So some suspicion is warranted, I think. Let's move to the bullpen. We talked earlier about Francisco Rodriguez blowing his second save. Naftali Feliz also blew a save, just his first of the year. No closer controversy in either place, but is there anyone to speculate on either in Detroit or Milwaukee?
I don't know how interested I am in speculating on the other options. I am a little bit concerned about K-Rod just because the velocity seems to be down a couple miles an hour, and he's kind of lived on the edge in the past. Feliz, this is what he's going to do. He's, in my opinion, going to be a lot like Fernando Rodney, just bad enough to keep his job. The difference might be that in Milwaukee, he only gets one or two save opportunities a week, so it takes a little longer. But at this point, I tell you what, the Brewers have a middle reliever, and I'm not going to remember his last name or his first name, Barnes. And I saw him a couple of days ago, and he looked impressive. The thing that I liked about Feliz coming into the year was I didn't feel like there was anybody in Milwaukee that could really challenge him. But Barnes looked really impressive earlier this year.
Yeah, and I like Knebel too, and he is pitching in the eighth right now. But, I think Feliz is one of the more vulnerable closers at this point, but I agree with you. It'll take a while for that situation to unfold. K-Rod, that situation is just a frustration because you pretty much know it's just not going to go well, and yet he's just seems to be on the world's longest leash. So Justin Wilson, I think, would be okay as a closer, but I don't think we'll see it anytime soon. So a couple other closer situations that I do want to hone in on, Heath, but we've got to go to our final break. So we'll have a little more closer talk and a little more Royals talk right when we come back. Welcome back to FanRag Fantasy Baseball. I'm your host, Al Melchior, and my guest today is Keith Cummings from CBSSports.com. And a couple of little news items here. The Braves have activated Mack Kemp off of the DL. He was on there with a hamstring injury, and he is batting cleanup today for the Mets, for the Braves. That would be weird if he was batting cleanup for the Mets. And the Cardinals have placed Johnny Peralta on the DL with an upper respiratory illness. That'll clear something of a log jam there. I would think Colton Wong might be a little bit of a winner there. Greg Garcia, perhaps. Of course, Jed Jerko in that mix. Matt Carpenter, maybe he moves to third, maybe he stays at first, who knows? But one less moving part there for the Cardinals with Johnny Peralta on the 10-day DL. So, Heath, let's get back to some closer talk. When we talked about a couple of blown saves, but there were three closers who pitched last night who did not pitch in save situations. I thought each one was kind of interesting in its own way. Wade Davis, your former Royals closer, pitching for the Cubs in a non-save situation. And then Ken Giles also pitching in the eighth, facing the top of, well, now I'm trying to remember the Angels order. Yeah, it was the Angels order. And those went well. And then A.J. Ramos, it didn't go so well for him, and I want to talk about him in a second. But Wade Davis, he's just not getting a whole lot of love. I saw him fall in drafts. I'm just not seeing him mentioned among the elite anymore like he was, even as recently as a year ago. Am I missing something? Because to me, Davis, he had a rough spring, but in terms of pitching games when it counts, seems like he's about as good as ever.
I miss you so much on the podcast, Al. I've been teased the entire preseason because I had Wade Davis as my number one closer. And I think some of it was there was injury concern. But yeah. The way I felt about it was the Cubs just traded for the guy. I'm pretty healthy. And he's pitching for what I expect to be the best team in baseball to challenge 100 wins. I don't buy into the narrative from last year that the Cubs win by too much, so they're not going to give him enough saves. So, no, I mean, he hasn't been 2014 Wade Davis in terms of his strikeouts or anything like that to this point, but he's not given up a run. And he's got 2 wins and 3 saves in the first 3 weeks of the season. Everything is roses with Wade Davis.
Yeah, and you're right, the strikeouts have been down for a couple years now, but consistently he's just been good at avoiding hard contact, and he's still doing that this year. So, yeah, I think people are sleeping on Wade Davis. I think he's a buy low, personally.
Buy low.
Yeah. Now, A.J. Ramos was brought in because he hadn't pitched in, I think it was 5 days, either 4 or 5 days. It was Saturday, so I guess do the math. That would be 4 days. And didn't get an out, so he had to be bailed out. Not really bailed out because the Marlins were losing, and it was just Ramos getting some work. But he essentially did have to get bailed out by Harlan Garcia, who's been up for less than a week. Is there a reason to be worried about A.J. Ramos, and who in the heck in that loaded Marlins bullpen do you target if you are?
Well, I think that's the reason to be concerned is the Marlins have like 17 relief pitchers that we think could be good. And then the other one is, like last year, he had a very nice year. He had 40 saves, ERA under 3, but he's walking almost 5 batters per 9 innings. You're walking a tightrope, essentially, and sometimes you fall off the tightrope, and he has done that a couple times. I guess Ziegler's probably the guy, but I don't feel like his rope is very short.
I disagree, and maybe I misunderstood what you're saying. I think that he could be really vulnerable really soon because he, when they went out and got Fernando Rodney last year, they went right to Rodney. And they do have more options this year and better options. So to me, the tough part is picking which one. Ziegler has been pitching the eighth a lot, so I would lean towards him. But that's a tough one. That's a tough one. And Phelps has been pitching the eighth too, and they've been insisting that they want him for multiple innings. So it's a really hard one to read. But what I'll do, I'm just going to basically sidestep the whole thing and do something we'll both enjoy, which is talk about the Royals.
Yeah.
And so I solicited some, Royals feedback, Royals questions. And the first thing we got was from @ACSGuy, who said, love Yost, but WTH, is he taking all that, or I'm not even sure I understand this. Is he not worried about Mondesi? What's he saying? He's complaining about Raul Mondesi.
Yes. He's basically, Ned Yost said he wasn't worried about Mondesi. I just want to read you a quote from Ned Yost. And this is from 4 years ago. I'm going to tell you something. If I'm wrong on this kid, it'll be the first. I've never been wrong about one of these kids who I've had conviction with. None of them. We're talking about 15 guys over a 30-year career. He was talking about Mike Moustakas then when people wanted to run Moustakas out of town. And everybody made fun of Ned Yost in the media because at that point he was a terrible manager. And then he got to the World Series twice, and now he's a good manager. The bigger story is that this is the way that Ned Yost talks about his guys, especially young players. And the players love that about him, and the media laughs about it.
we're kind of doing, or I'm kind of doing that right now, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, the other thing with Mondesi is he's not going to hit below 200. He's got a 143 BABIP. He'll eventually get up to the 220 or 230 range. He might steal 20 or 25 bases. They aren't playing him for his OPS. They're playing him for his defense. They're playing him for his running. And bringing up Merrifield is probably a little bit of a sign, maybe more so than what Nedjo said.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I'd like to see Merrifield because I think at least in deeper leagues, he's a guy who could help you with batting average. But, you know, it's probably just not going to happen, I would think.
No, he's right-handed Adam Frazier.
So, well, let's get to some of the other comments here, Heath. Justin Mason, who actually is one of my Fangraphs colleagues, about Vargas, he said, saw good command last night, but velocity is concerning. And you brought that up too. And I don't know. I mean, you know, and we talked about Kyle Hendricks, and that's a guy who doesn't throw hard, but, you know, has had a lot of success, you know, in the previous couple seasons, despite it. I mean, is that maybe we're, you know, kind of overdoing it with Jason Vargas here on this show, but I mean, are you concerned about the velocity of all things with Vargas?
Well, I mean, I think it's a sliding scale. People drafted Kyle Hendricks as their number two starting pitcher. Some people even as their number one. And yeah, I'm concerned if the ace of my staff is throwing 90 miles an hour and getting beat around. But if it's a guy I'm picking up off the waiver wire that's been near perfect for the first three starts of the year, I don't have that high of it. I don't think Jason Vargas is going to continue to strike batters out at this rate. I'm just hoping he's a good starter the rest of the way. So I'm not that concerned about it.
All right. How about Ian Kennedy? He's off to a great start, and he had a great spring. He's walking a few guys more maybe than you like to see, but the overall results you would have to like. Is there anything to this?
I'm encouraged by Ian Kennedy. I think he has the ability to be a number three or number four starter. What may have helped Kennedy early in the year is the fact that Jorge Soler hurt his oblique, so they've been able to play somebody that's good at defense out in the outfield with as many fly balls as Kennedy gives up. I'm encouraged. I don't know that he has much upside beyond a top 40 starting pitcher, but I feel pretty confident he's going to be in that range.
Nope, that's, you know, I think if wherever you drafted him, that's probably a bonus, so that would be a good thing. Now, Mike Moustakas, I feel like I slept on Moustakas a little bit in drafts this year, and I did pick him up in a league, Heath, that you and I are in together, and I think, no, okay, we're in two leagues together this year, but this is the 12-team points league, and I had him, I got him late, and I kind of viewed him as a streamer, and I liked Ryan Healy's matchups for week two. I made the swap. I dumped Moustakas, picked up Healy. It was a disaster. Moustakas had a great week. Healy did nothing. And I was amazed that I could pick him up again for this week. So I've got Moustakas back, and I figured in a league that I'm in with you that Moustakas was a goner, and he should have been in just about any league. So was it just you're just happy with your third base situation, or you have some doubts about Moustakas?
Well, I have some doubts about Moustakas being a 300, 352, 620 hitter. But in that particular league, I have Nolan Arenado as my third baseman. And in most of my leagues, I have Travis Shaw already on my bench. And I still would rather have Shaw than Moustakas the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I think there's going to be more variability with Shaw. But, you know, he's going to at least half of his games are going to be really good at Miller Park. So that's that's a good one. Well, Heath, we don't really have time to get into it, but you wrote a really nice piece. It's your, I guess it's a weekly trade chart piece. Is that right?
Yeah, I do one every other week. Chris does one every other week. I do the roto. He does the points. So, yeah, trade chart on selling it things.
All right. Well, the latest one, Heath, that's yours. And you've written about trading Eric Thames, selling him high. So be sure to check that out. because I'm sure it's gonna, if you own Thames, it's going to be hard to let him go. But Heath, you try to talk people into that, right?
Yeah, I put a poll out on Twitter asking if people would trade him for Chris Davis, Carlos Santana, Jose Abreu, and about 40% of people said they wouldn't take any of those three. And if that's the perception of Thames, then I am definitely selling. I'd like to see if I can get a top 25 starter if I'm weak on pitching, or if I'm low on saves, maybe the guy like Joey Holton.
All right. Well, good note to end on there. Keith, thank you so much for joining me today. Great to be chatting with you again. We will be back tomorrow with Jessica Kleinschmidt. So have a great Thursday. Enjoy the baseball today. Hopefully we'll see you again here tomorrow. Take care.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.